Hi, and welcome to the Finally Pregnant podcast, the podcast for people who are finally pregnant after infertility and loss. I'm your host, Kat Strawbridge, and after almost 7 years trying with multiple rounds of fertility treatment, which sadly included pregnancy loss, last year I was finally pregnant, and now I'm finally parenting my gorgeous daughter, Ren. Hello, how are you doing? I hope that you're well. I am really excited to be back with series four of the Finally Pregnant podcast. Honestly, when I first launched this, I did not expect to be here now. And I can confirm that we will be back for series five in the summer too, which is wonderful news to be able to share with you right at the beginning of series four. You'll hear an ad a little later, but I wanted to give a special mention along with a big thank you to this series sponsor, Mira Fertility. They have helped make it happen. And you will hear a little bit more about them in the ad break a little bit later. So what's been going on? Still in lockdown? Yep. Feeling rubbish about it all? Yep. Starting to see a light at the end of the tunnel? Yeah. Imagine by the time this series is over, we'll be back to seeing a few more people, which is just wonderful news. That is definitely, definitely something to look forward to, as well as all of the wonderful episodes I have lined up for you with some incredible women sharing their stories. Honestly, like, it was International Women's Day on Monday, and I would just like to extend a huge thanks to all of the women who have been sharing their stories with me. And I do say women because at the time of recording this, I haven't got a male episode in this series, which is very unusual. And I will aim to rectify that before I finish recording all of the episodes. But at the moment, huge, huge shout out to the women, some of whom are sharing their story publicly for the very first time as well, which is something that I am very humbled about. This week, we are looking ahead to Mother's Day, which is happening on Sunday. And I know that that can be a difficult one and also a wonderful one. I recently was in the supermarket, and I've put this on an Instagram post, so you may have read this story already. I saw a stand for Mother's Day cards, and I went over and picked one for my mum, one for me, and one from Ren. So two for my mum. And as I was there and kind of moving away, it struck me that I hadn't been affected by that in a sad way. And I felt a bit guilty about that. Well, actually, first I felt relief that finally it wasn't a holiday during the year that really upset me. So that was like a huge relief and a realization. And secondly, I felt a bit, like I say, guilty for forgetting, it almost felt like, which I didn't, because it was pretty, you know, instantaneous that I had remembered how difficult all of those years had been. But I just, yeah, it's amazing. And it just made me think back to all of those years. And honestly, I can still see the mascara stains on the pillow from certain years. And even when I was pregnant, I wasn't ready to celebrate. Last year, we were supposed to be in Centre Parks, which is my happy place. And Bob had booked it as a surprise. But because of lockdown, we had to cancel it or postpone it. And we still haven't managed to make it there yet, but we will this year, hopefully. And this year, yeah, it's just going to be really, really lovely. Chilled, quiet, but lovely. It will be really interesting to hear your thoughts on Mother's Day. And I did do a post yesterday about it. So if you are on Instagram, please head over to Trying Years. And I would love to hear your thoughts, your celebrations, your fears about Mother's Day, because I know that it brings up a lot of emotions for lots of different reasons. And that is just a place where you can share without feeling judged, just to receive support. So yeah, head over there if you would. Well, if you want to. Looking more immediately now to today's episode, I'm really excited to share this one with you. It's with the lovely Charlie Barker, or Charlie Lounder as she is on Instagram, who is the founder of Bumps and Burpees. Charlie sadly experienced recurrent miscarriage before having her son Alfie last summer. And during our chat, she shares her trying to conceive story, what it was like being pregnant after multiple losses, what impact that had on her birth choices and how parenting after that and also during lockdown has been. Charlie has recently had her first Bumps and Burpees book published, which we talk a little about too. If you're listening to this when it first comes out, I'm really excited to tell you that we've put together a little giveaway for you. Charlie is offering a free 30-minute one-to-one chat about exercising if you're pregnant or postnatal, plus a copy of her book. And as it's the first episode of a new series, I thought I would throw in an annual membership to my Hangout membership, which is a place that you can find support and understanding and share the highs and lows of being finally pregnant and parenting with a group of incredible women who get it. They just really do. So yeah, head over to Instagram and find the post, like it, and tag as many of your friends as you'd like in the comments. Each tag equals an entry, and then make sure you're following myself and Charlie. Don't worry. You don't have to remember all of that. All of the details are on the post. So head over and enter. As always, this little preamble wouldn't be the same without your regular reminder to subscribe, rate, and review the podcast wherever you listen. And that's it. I will be back next week. Take care. Bye-bye. Before we start, time for a quick ad break. Knowing your fertile days are so important if you are trying to get pregnant or trying to avoid it. With the Mirror Fertility Tracker, you will know your fertile window up to 6 days. It is the only tracker on the market that provides you an accurate and personalized ovulation analysis by tracking your LH and estrogen hormone levels. Find out more at mirrorcare.com. There's a link in the show notes. And get £25 off your tracker with the code FINALLYPREGNANT. Hi there, Charlie. How are you doing?
I'm doing really well, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad, thank you. Middle of lockdown still, but, you know, kind of just trying to see the light at the end of the tunnel, you know. So,
I get to every Friday and it's like, another week done. I can't believe we're still here. But you know what? You still have to celebrate those small things. We've done another week.
And it does still, you get that Friday feeling, don't you? Even though it is lockdown. That's the weirdest thing.
Yeah, you do. I mean, you have to hang on to those things, I think, because otherwise every day just blurs into one.
Totally. Over in the Hangout, which is my community membership, we do Champagne Fridays, and that is my favourite post of the week. So we all celebrate something that's happened. It doesn't matter how big or how small. It's just a really, really nice kind of, you know.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, it's good fun, actually. It's one of my favourites. And I know some of the members, it's one of some of their favourite posts as well. Just to read through all the little wins that people have had during the week. It's fun. So, but you have, it'd be great to get to know a bit about you for anyone who hasn't come across you. I know you from Instagram, and you've got a couple of accounts on there, your own personal one, and also Bumps and Burpees, and you've got a book coming out, or just come out, actually, hasn't it?
Yeah, this week it just came out.
Super, congratulations. So we will talk a bit about that, but it'll be really wonderful to get to know you a bit more, because I know, and some of the listeners will know, that you did have quite a difficult route to parenthood. You do now have the gorgeous Alfie, who's about 6 months old now. If you could talk to us a little bit about your fertility journey, that would be really wonderful.
Yeah, of course. So I am, I have to remember how old I am now. I'm 32, just 32. And I got married when I was 29 to my university sweetheart. So we met at in Freshers Week in university, and 10 years later, we got married. And then I think you just assume that it's going to go how it goes in the books or in the films. And, you know, I just thought, well, funnily enough, I was like, I don't want to try straight away because I don't want to be pregnant on my honeymoon. You just assume that everything's going to go so swimmingly. So we got married in September. And then in the new year, we just thought, OK, let's start trying for a family. It'll probably take a while. Let's just see. And lo and behold, my husband was on a work trip away for a couple of days, and I just suddenly felt a bit lightheaded, and it just occurred to me, oh, I'll just take a pregnancy test. And I've taken few in my time, you know, and you always, I think you know deep down what it's going to say, weirdly, and I've never ever thought I'm going to see two lines, and even this time I just was ready to see that one line. So I did it, put it on the side, brushed my teeth and then turned to look at it and was just absolutely gobsmacked that there was two lines on there. And this was, I think, the first month we'd started trying. So I was completely thrown back by it. And I wouldn't say I was embarrassed, but I was a bit like, oh my God, I can't believe it was that easy. You know, I know loads of people really struggle. So, wow, I'm going to, you know, I'll keep quiet about this, about how easy it was. I'm so lucky. Anyway, my husband came back from his trip and I obviously surprised him by throwing this stick of pee in his face. And he was like, oh my God, over the moon. And then we kind of kept quiet about it. We thought, oh, we'll surprise our family at 12 weeks. But then 2 weeks, maybe 2.5 weeks later, I started bleeding. And I know that you can bleed in early pregnancy through working with so many women in their pregnancies, but I just didn't feel very happy about it, of course. And then it kept going and going, and then I knew what was happening, basically. So I called the doctor, who, of course, at this stage, you haven't seen a doctor, really, have you? So it was like 3 weeks in. The doctor just said, stay at home. If you can manage everything at home, then you don't need to come in. And that's what happened. It was sort of 2 days of bleeding and then it was over. And it was really sad, but it kind of was a reality check, like, okay, these things happen. We were very lucky to get pregnant straight away, but it just showed my husband and I, George, that it's what we really wanted. Because I think when you start trying for the first time, you think, oh, I don't even know if we're ready, but let's just give it a go. And when you have it and then don't have it, you think, oh, actually, I really wanted it. So it was a good thing in a way for both of us to talk about that and think, oh, I'm really sad that that didn't work out. Okay, let's go. And my kind of personality kicked in where I was like, we need to try again immediately, right away. I want to try again. So the doctor said that because, you know, it was very early on, and as soon as the bleeding was finished, you could try again, you know, as long as there's no risk of infection with the bleeding. So we tried again, and when I was waiting for my period to come the next month, it didn't. And I did a pregnancy test and it was positive. So the very next chance we could, we got pregnant again. And as you'll see in this fertility story, I don't even know if you call it fertility, because we get pregnant very quickly. However, our problem is stage two, where I cannot keep it in there. But anyway, so we got pregnant again straight away. And this time there was slightly less elation and slightly more anxiety. And the first couple of weeks, I just was absolutely dreading going to the toilet every single time. You think, oh, this is it. This is where I'm going to see bleeding and whatever. And it didn't. It didn't come. And all the symptoms started developing. My boobs were really sore. I started feeling sick and I was loving it. I was so happy that all these symptoms were there, even though they were not very pleasant, because it meant that things were going in the right direction. And then we went on a trip to New York. And the whole way through New York, I decided to accept it, you know, because I think the beginning you think, if. And in New York, I was looking at baby clothes and shops and I was thinking, oh, I'm going to be pregnant at my best friend's wedding. And, you know, I think you just plan out the next 9 months within minutes. So we got really excited. And when we came back from this trip, we were seeing all of our family. And George has a sister who lives abroad and she was home. So we thought, oh, let's tell them while they're all here together. So before we went to tell them, we wanted to get a private scan so that we could just have something to show them. And at this scan, I should have been 10 weeks, I think, 10 and a half weeks. So well into it to be able to see something. So I went along to the scan and the sonographer did it as an internal scan, and which is lovely. If anyone's had them, not very pleasant, but you know, you do anything to see your baby at this stage. And she said, okay, so you are pregnant. And it was that, George immediately thought she was telling us we were having twins because he saw a sac and the fetus and he was like, there's two. And she said, but it seems like you're a bit earlier on than you think. And I was like, well, first of all, that's not really possible because I was pregnant a second ago before that. So there wasn't much room for error. And at this stage, I really knew my dates because I don't know. A lot of women say to me, oh, we're just trying. We're not being careful, you know. But for me, it was like, well, immediately when we decided to try, I was tracking dates. I knew this. I knew that. I knew everything. So I knew that that wasn't necessarily true. But she said to me, go away for 2 weeks, the two longest weeks of our lives, and come back and we'll do another scan and we can see whether there's been any growth. So we went away and all I did was adding up all day long, every day, thinking, okay, well, maybe I conceived then, but it didn't implant till then. And, you know, I was doing as much as I could to stay positive, and I convinced myself that, well, look, I've not bled, so it must be fine. And everything's still going on. I was still feeling horrendous. I had all the symptoms, and I turned myself around. I convinced myself everything was fine. And when we went back in those 2 weeks, I actually was quite excited to see this baby wriggling around, because I thought, well, it's still in there. It must be growing. And she did the scan, and she looked at the screen. And, you know, they turn the screen to face them, and when they see something, they turn it to face you. And she just sort of shut it down. She said, I'm really sorry. And being very British, I think, I felt sorry for her. I was like, oh, no, don't worry. I know what you're going to say. I felt like, what a horrible part of her job to have to tell someone this when I know what she's going to say. So I went into that weird robotic protective mode of her. And I was like, oh, no, that's fine. I thought that might be it. And I sort of kept it together until we had to go and sit in the waiting room again and wait to see a doctor. And we were sat in the waiting room with all other pregnant women, and they were all rubbing their tummies or looking at their scan photos. And I just kept looking up at the ceiling, blinking, trying to stop the tears from coming. So I thought, once they come, I'm not going to be able to talk. Anyway, saw the doctor, and of course the tears came. I was absolutely beside myself, and she was lovely. And basically said, look, we'll have to do a medical management of this miscarriage because it's a missed miscarriage. The body still thinks the baby's in there. And we could let it go naturally. It's up to you. But I personally had already done 2 weeks of that and nothing had happened. And I just wanted to get on with the process, I think. I was given the medication to take home to start the miscarriage, basically. And what was interesting is that the nurse was so sweet, but she was very... I was definitely like a number in her list that day rather than a person. I felt like she was just, she said to me, so can you tick this box to tell you that I've given you the pills? Can you tick this box to tell you I've warned you of the risks? You know, it was very much a process, and she wasn't thinking about how I might feel. She didn't really warn me what was going to happen. She said, oh, it'll just be like a period, like a heavy period. So I thought, okay, well, that's fine. I can do that. And it basically was so traumatic, and they hadn't prepared me for that, because I just thought, oh, when it's a period, it just, you know, you put in a pad or a tampon and it's all over, basically. But it wasn't like that. And it's something that I can never unsee. And so for about 3 or 4 days, I still had all the hormones in me, and I was having the night sweats, and I had to keep taking pregnancy tests because they told me to report when I'd got a negative. And I was still positive for so long. And it's one of those things, you always want to see a positive test, whereas in this case, you don't want to see one, and it plays on your mind. It's a very weird thing. And it was horrible. I'd wake up in complete state and hot sweats, and I was just going a bit crazy, if I'm honest. And for the first sort of 10 days, 2 weeks, I just stopped. I didn't work. And obviously I have the most understanding clients in, you know, pre and postnatal women. So they were absolutely lovely and said, you just take any time you need. And I stayed at home and I cried a lot. I ate a lot of chocolate. I watched a lot of rubbish TV. And then I just decided that this is doing me no good. I need to sort of get back into real life. And it was good for me because especially the women I work with, they knew what had happened. So I could talk to them or have a little cry. And every so often I'd feel like I was having a great day and I'd just be sort of driving along and the traffic light would go red and it would make me burst into tears and it would come out of nowhere. But I think that that's part of it, isn't it? I think you have to accept the emotions rather than try and bury them away. But I'm very good at putting on a brave face, so I think I had to really learn about that. But what was interesting, I mean, butt in if you need to. I'm just
No. Like, the people want to hear your story. Like, all I would say, I guess, to that is that the emotions do come up, you know, and that can go on for a long, long time. I remember reading some research about the connection between anxiety or miscarriage and anxiety, and quite often it shows itself 9 months after the miscarriage. Now, instantly, you might think, oh, well, that's around the due date, but obviously it depends when the actual miscarriage has happened. Yeah. But I think it's really good for people to, you know, realise that it is something that can come up when you least expect it, and that can be, you know, over the next few weeks, months, you know, that can last a long, long time. So yeah, it's just worth being aware of that.
Completely. And what I was going to say as well is that it was very interesting because I felt like I was dealing with it, but my husband wasn't. And he seemed to be fine and he was off going back to work. And I was thinking, oh my God, how is he so unemotional about this? But what happened was a couple of weeks after, when I felt like I was, you know, feeling a lot better in myself and, you know, and I dealt with a lot of it, we went to a wedding and I found George and he burst into tears. And he had clearly been keeping strong for me. And then once he knew that I was sort of okay and he could take a step back a little bit from being my rock, he went through it himself. And I could then be there for him a bit. And I think it was brilliant for him to do that because he didn't do it on purpose. But I think I was so worried that, first of all, I thought, does he even care? Then I knew he did, but I thought, this is going to come out later. He's going to get really upset about it later. So I'm really glad that he did go through those emotions. And then together we could talk about what we were going to do. So we decided then at that wedding, because I was there in my floods of tears going, we should try again straight away for a baby. And he was going, no way, you are not ready. And I was, you know, floods of tears going, yes, I am. I'm ready. I'm completely fine. And actually I wasn't. If it was to happen again, I was not strong enough to deal with it. So we decided at that wedding that we were going to take the summer off. It was May, I think, at the time. We were going to take the whole summer off and just have a nice time, get back to ourselves and just take it off our minds for a little bit. And obviously it doesn't come off your mind at all. But we went on holiday. Remember holidays? We could go on them.
Even the holidays that are the ones because you're getting over like the crap that's happened. I even miss those holidays, yeah. You know?
I'll take any of it, any holiday now. But it was so nice because we just enjoyed ourselves back as Charlie and George rather than like Charlie and George who are trying to be mum and dad. And it was really nice. And so we did that and we went to a couple more weddings. We were at that time of our life where everyone was getting married. A couple more weddings. And we then came back home. And I think September, October time, we tried again. And knowing us, we got pregnant, I think, the second month we were trying. First month, we didn't get pregnant. And I remember thinking, oh, my God, we've got a problem now, because I was so used to getting pregnant immediately. And obviously, you know, these things just don't happen like that all the time. But I was panicked about everything at this stage. So second month, we got pregnant and there was no elation at this one. No happiness. I was just like, right, here we are. We're going to do this again. And I was very much like, OK, I don't want to talk about it. But I just every day George would come home from work saying, still in there? Still OK? Yep, let's move on. I don't want to talk about it. So we were very much like that. And a few weeks later, maybe four, I was hosting a talk at the baby show, which I don't know if you've probably been to it. It's a big expo in London where it's just filled with pregnant women. I was doing a talk there. And just before my talk, I went to the toilet and I saw that I was bleeding. And it was like an actual nightmare. So I was just surrounded by pregnant women everywhere you walk in that place, you're bumping into bumps. So I did my talk. I don't know how I did it. I just went into some sort of auto robotic mode. I did my talk. Then as I finished the talk, I thought, I need to get out of here. I need to get out of here right now. And it was honestly like a movie, like in slow motion. I was just navigating through bumps and buggies and bottles. And it was horrible. The worst place ever to have had that happen. And funnily enough, we had two of our friends who had been at the baby show who were heavily pregnant coming over to ours for dinner after the show. And I was just there like, I can't escape this. So anyway, I obviously told myself this might be normal bleeding. This might be the implantation bleeding or whatever. And the next day I did a pregnancy test and it said negative. So this was a very quick and easy on paper miscarriage. But I found it weirdly the hardest mentally because I thought, right, that's three. And at three, the NHS do all the testing. And so that must mean we have a problem here. We're one of those people that now has an issue. And it was the first time I'd ever not thought, oh, yeah, well, of course we'll have a baby. I suddenly was thinking, will we ever? Is this going to be it now? Or, you know, how are we ever going to get through this? So went through to the NHS and did all the testing. And they were great. And it was done really quickly. But all the results came back that absolutely everything was normal. There was nothing on paper wrong with me. So they said, it's just bad luck. You know, these things happen. carry on trying. So we did. We carried on trying. Oh, no, I know what I did. I decided that I was also going to do my own research because that's the kind of person I am. And I thought, I feel like there's something happening here because I kept miscarrying at the same time. Whether my body realised or whether it was missed, I was always miscarrying around 6 to 8 weeks. And so for me, I was thinking, something's happening at that moment that's miscarrying these pregnancies because it's not, it's the same every time. So I was having acupuncture with the wonderful Emma Cannon. She's been a friend of mine for a very long time. I used to babysit her daughters. So she was brilliant with me and really kept me calm. And I would see her every week for some acupuncture. And she recommended to go and see this doctor who was a recurrent miscarriage specialist because she agreed with me that she thought it wasn't bad luck and that something was going on. So this doctor was a private doctor, and so I had to come home and convince George that we should spend all our savings on seeing this doctor, basically, because he believed the NHS, of course, because, you know, they're doctors and they told us it's bad luck and we're going to be fine. So he said, look, come on, why don't we keep trying? And I said to him, look, this doctor's very busy, so why don't we book an appointment? It's like 2 months away. And then we'll see. And, you know, that was me being very sneaky and conniving because I thought, great, because then I've got 2 months to convince him this is the right thing to do. Anyway, knowing us and their story like you do now, you can imagine what happened. We got pregnant in that 2 months. And the doctor had actually told us, do not be pregnant when you come to see me. Yeah, so I was like, oh my God, we've ruined it and he's going to make us wait another 2 months or whatever. Anyway, I thought, let's just go and see him. I might have miscarried by then anyway because we all know that's what keeps happening. So we went to see him and we were like two naughty school children sat in the headmaster's office like, we're really sorry, we're pregnant. And he was like, I told you not to get pregnant. And he was quite strict with us, actually. It was almost like telling us off for having sex. And it was like, I'm really sorry. Anyway, he said to us quite bluntly, you're probably going to miscarry this baby because that's what your body keeps doing anyway. And it was quite hard to hear that. But, you know, I appreciated his direct attitude. And he said, I'm going to take all the blood tests and see what's going on with your body whilst you're pregnant. So actually, in a weird way, it's quite helpful that you're pregnant. And what he did is he said, I'm going to put you on the course of steroids that I would put you on if it comes up that you need it. But this is just in case we can save this pregnancy. So take the medication, go away for 2 weeks, another 2 week wait, go away for 2 weeks, come back and we'll get the results and we'll see what's happened in your body and whether you've miscarried or not. So went away for 2 weeks, tried really hard not to think about it. Oh my God, because he'd said that to us that we were going to miscarry. I think that was helpful for me because I thought, well, there's literally no point getting attached to this baby. What I was attached to was finding out the results. I was more excited about that. Anyway, we went back for our appointment and he said, look, it shows in your blood tests that when you are pregnant, your immune system goes into overdrive and your natural killer cells, although you don't have any more than the normal person, which some people have loads of them, you have a normal amount, but they go really active. They're highly, highly aggressive during your pregnancies. So he said, it's very unlikely that this baby has survived in there. So anyway, he did the scan. It was a horrible scan because it was like, I knew what I was going to see, but there was a little heartbeat and we had never seen a heartbeat before because we'd always missed that scan. So I couldn't believe it. I'd never been so happy to see that flickering dot. I mean, that's all it was, a dot that was flickering. But I suddenly was like, oh my God, I'm in love. That's my child there. And so he said, right, we're going to start you on the proper course of medication. So I was on a drip. I was on steroids. I was on all sorts of things. And he said, here are the side effects. And I was like, I don't care. I literally don't care what any of the side effects are. Give me them. And he said, you're going to gain a lot of weight on these drugs. And I was like, okay, oh well, you know, if I can keep this baby, I'll take anything. So went away and basically I had to go back and see him every 2 weeks for a scan and then every 4 weeks. So in between those two, I'd go in and have a drip. And the drip was basically a whole bunch of things in there that was meant to coat those natural killer cells to sort of suppress them and stop my body attacking the pregnancy.
So this is the pregnancy that gave you Alfie. Am I right in saying
yes,
that?
Yes, it is.
So you're being monitored all the way through this, which is brilliant and kind of what we want when we are finally pregnant, for sure. How did you feel about that pregnancy? Like, were you holding your breath all the way through? I guess if you were being monitored, how did you feel about those appointments that you were having?
Well, I was actually monitored by this private doctor only until 16 weeks. 19 weeks, actually. 19 weeks. So once we got to 19 weeks, he was very happy for me to wean off the medication and then go back into the NHS. And I was very happy about that because it was expensive. But they were like my safety blanket, so it was quite hard to let go of that. I absolutely loved being scanned every 2 weeks, and I wish I could be scanned every 2 weeks for the entire pregnancy. I think I only didn't feel anxious currently in a scan. As soon as the scan was taken off my tummy, I thought, well, what if I miscarried just then? You know, I would have the scan anxiety was just through the roof for me. And I think I wouldn't realise it so much, but in the week leading up to any appointment or scan, I would get really irritable. Things would get to me that wouldn't usually get to me. I wouldn't sleep very well, or I found that I was sleeping all the time. I think, and then it would come towards, you know, the day before, and I think, oh, that's why, you know, I'm worried about this scan. I think for me, up until I could feel any kicks, which annoyingly was really late because my placenta was anterior, so it was blocking the kicks. So typical, I couldn't feel any kicks till I was almost 22 weeks. So it felt like a really long time. And once I could feel a bit of movement in there, that was sort of really comforting to know, oh, there's something moving. So that must mean there's a good sign in there. I felt like this pregnancy, we told people early on, not everybody, but we told our parents at the flickering heartbeat scan. I sent them the picture like, guess what? There's a dot in there and it's got a heartbeat. So we told them there, but I equally said to them, I don't want you to get excited because we're not excited. I don't want you to talk to me about it, but I'm just telling you this is what's happening. And they sort of went by our lead. So if we were excited, they would be. But if we were being very matter of fact about things, they also would be. So that was very helpful. And I told one of my very best friends, because we were going through the first trimester around Christmas time and my birthday, and there was a lot of parties and things, and I didn't want to go to any of them, but I wanted to have someone to back up my rubbish excuses. So I didn't want to go to a night out on my own birthday, so I needed her to give me, like, back up my story, basically. So that was very helpful, and it was nice because she knew what I was going through. We then waited until we were basically signed off from the private clinic before I announced it on Instagram. So I think at this stage I was probably 16, 17 weeks. So not too far off, you know, when other people do. But I was always going to be open about the miscarriage anyway. I just didn't announce it earlier because I didn't want people to ask me about it. I didn't want to really talk about it until I felt a bit more sure. Like, I didn't even wear my baby on board badge until it was clear I had a baby on board, because I had a bump. Because I thought, if someone gives me a seat and I take it, then maybe I'm jinxing the pregnancy. So I'd find myself giving pregnant women a seat and I'd stand up the whole journey and I think, oh, I really need that seat. I'm knackered. So I felt anxious the entire way through, but I was very good at talking about my feelings to my family and to George, which I think really helped. And I think each pregnancy taught me that a little bit more. I don't know how everyone feels in a pregnancy after loss, but I think you're a bit robbed of the joy, and it's hard to take the good things without adding on the what ifs, isn't it?
Completely. And like you talk about jinxing and about kind of almost not admitting to yourself and not admitting to everyone else quite how you're feeling, even, you know, or rather not admitting, but not allowing yourself, I guess, to kind of enjoy and thereby not allowing other people to enjoy, which is totally right, you know, like for them to follow your lead. I don't mean like you're not allowing them. One of the things that you mentioned there that I know so many people, and I myself had exactly the same thing. When you were coming off the drugs from the private doctor, how did that feel? Because I know when I was coming off my drugs, I was thinking, oh my gosh, like, is my body going to be able to do it without the drugs? You know, like, it's got me this far and maybe that's what's keeping me pregnant. And I wasn't on the same drugs as you, although I think I have been on them at one point in my journey. I think I know the doctor you're talking about. But yeah, for me, coming off I was on steroids and my Cyclogest and things like that. I just thought, oh my gosh, my body's not going to be able to do it on its own. Like, how did you feel coming off your drugs?
I felt exactly the same, and actually I begged the doctor to give me an extra prescription because I didn't, even though the Cyclogest is horrendous, those pessaries, they are not nice, I was desperate to stay on them. They were like a safety blanket, as I said. So I was very glad to be able to wean off some of the steroids, so I wasn't cutting them out cold turkey. I was taking 5 a day for a week and then 4 a day for a week and then 3 and then 2. So I came off them slowly. And I think at the end of the weaning off, I still had an extra like 4 in the pack. So I just did like 1 every 3 days, which obviously doesn't do anything. But for me, it was like, I'm just keeping it in there, keeping it going. I was terrified. And I remember sitting in the clinic and I was tied up to a drip next to another lady as well. And she said that it was her second pregnancy. And I said, oh my God, well, what happened after you came off the drugs last time? And she said, I was beside myself with worry. I was terrified, but it was fine. Everything was fine. And it was really helpful for her to tell me that not only was it fine, but that she also felt how I felt. So I didn't feel like I was being crazy. It was really normal to feel like that. But I still have some of the packets in my sort of medicine cabinet, and I look at them every so often and just think, oh my God, I can't believe every single morning at breakfast I would take a concoction of like 8 to 10 pills, and that was my normal, and I felt very safe with them. But yeah, it did take me a bit of time to feel okay with coming off them, and I think then I just held on to the hope that the prenatal vitamin would be enough to carry me through. But it did take some getting used to, for sure.
It is hard, and I always think, oh, it's so unfair, like so much of what we go through is unfair anyway. But when someone who has had a difficult journey to conceive then has an anterior placenta, every time my heart just, I think, no, because you are so, I think so often people are desperate to feel those kicks, because that's, you know, it, outside of the scans, that's the thing that makes you really think, yes, this is happening. And it's almost at that point, and you tell me if you would in a moment, that that's the point where you can almost let yourself believe and even, dare I say, start bonding with the little one once they're moving and kicking, and you can actually, you know that it's definitely happening, even though you know from the scans there's something different about physically feeling it. But you want that to happen so much, and then for that to be delayed, and because of an anterior placenta and not as frequent, oh my goodness, like, how did you manage that?
Well, I just was rolling my eyes at this baby, just thinking, of course you're going to make me wait for some kicks. Of course. And I got to the stage with all of this journey where I thought, of course that happens to me, because anything that could go wrong is going wrong. And obviously a placenta being anterior is not wrong, but I thought, of course, why would I expect anything to go my way? And when I felt my first kick, I was sitting in my car outside a client's house because I was a bit early, so I sat there doing some emails or something like that, and I felt it and I started laughing, and it was like a nervous laughter, but I was just, it's like a cloud lifted off me. I thought, oh, there it is, I can feel it, and you know, immediately knew that's what it was. And I think because it was so late that I felt the kicks, it wasn't, I didn't really feel any flutters or you know, people say it feels like butterflies, for me it was like a, oh, it was a kick. And from then on, my God, he kicked me all day and all night. And as much as it annoyed me at 3 o'clock in the morning, I was like, no, no, it's fine. Keep kicking. Like, I just want to know that you're okay in there. I didn't have a bump for quite a long time, and I didn't have kicks for quite a long time. So when they did finally come, that's when you, like you said, I decided, okay, this pregnancy does seem like it's here to stay. I'm going to start getting to terms with that. And so we ordered a few things. By this point, by 20 weeks, we were in lockdown. So I was at home with my husband all day. So, you know, I thought, oh, let's decide which buggy we want. And I thought, oh, God, because it was the first lockdown, I thought everything's going to be delayed. It might not arrive for 20 weeks and then we won't have a buggy. So he ordered a buggy and it came in 5 days. So I had just accepted the pregnancy in my head and then we had a buggy in our house. So I sort of said, we can't get it out of the box, keep it in the box because, you know, don't want to jinx everything. And I got better and better at it and slowly started buying things and stopping saying if this baby arrives or if we have a baby and saying when. And that was a big deal to me. But also, in a very weird way, lockdown was quite helpful for me. I felt like I was in my safety bubble at home. I didn't need to go anywhere. I didn't need to pretend I was feeling great when I wasn't. I was just here with my husband. And I don't know, I actually didn't hate it. The first lockdown, I feel very different now. But I quite liked the fact that we were just at home and I could rest when I wanted to and I wasn't overexerting myself and I could teach my clients in my slippers rather than having to go to their house and things like this. And so I think, yeah, it took me a while to accept the pregnancy and we'll probably go into the birth and things in a minute, but I don't think I stopped feeling anxious. And well, I don't think you ever stop feeling anxious even when you have a baby, but that kind of anxiety, when Athy was put on my chest, I just remember taking a really deep breath in thinking, oh my God, you're here. Like, I didn't realise how much I was worried about this until you came, because towards the end I thought, look at me, I was huge. I felt like I was huge and I wasn't worried that I was going to miscarry because I was, you know, I was being kicked left, right and centre. But I think until he was actually in my arms, I didn't quite believe we were going to ever get there. And it was a very, very surreal moment. And I felt a lot of pressure when he was put on my chest. I thought, what am I supposed to say? They're all watching for my reaction. And of course they weren't, but I thought, in the movies, they all cry and they have to say something amazing to the baby. And I just stared at him and thought, oh my God, it was you all along. You were in there. And it was a very, very bizarre moment. It felt like a bit of slow motion. But yeah, I think I felt anxious until the very, very end. But I sort of got so used to it that it became the norm and I didn't realise how anxious I was, if that makes sense.
It really makes total sense. And I think, unfortunately, that is quite normal as well. I wish it wasn't, but I, you know, I think it is really quite normal. And I'm sure there'll be people listening who are nodding along and hearing you say that will validate their feelings and their anxiety through their pregnancy. How did your anxiety affect your birth planning? You know, did you have thoughts around it? You had been working with women who were pregnant for quite a long time at this point. So you had probably had lots of conversations about this, but did you have a birth plan? Did you state what you wanted specifically, or were you fairly flexible around that?
Well, what was really interesting is that we did an NCT class and it was on Zoom, which was unfortunate because I really wanted to meet people, but it was amazing. And actually when we went round, I say circle, we went round all of our cameras and we all had to say what we were most anxious about in our pregnancy, I was blown away because we had one girl in the group who'd had a stillborn the year before. We had two other IVF babies after miscarriages, one IVF baby because of infertility, and me. So out of 8 couples, we had 5 of us who had experienced baby loss or fertility struggles. So it made the classes really, really relevant because the teacher took that into account with everything she was talking about, and anxiety was prevalent in all of our conversations. So when it came to the birth plan, I felt very happy to leave it up to what was just going to happen. So I'd said I would love to have the baby in the water because I think that would be really nice, and it was a heat wave, so I was like, I think it's going to be really hot in the hospital, so it might be really nice to be in the water. But apart from that, when the midwife gave me a sort of checklist to create a birth plan. And she said, if you want to use these questions just to sort of guide yourself through it. And I found myself answering to every single one, if possible, if necessary, if I need it. And it was like, do you want epidural? Maybe. I decided I wanted to keep every single option open. So actually, I think it helped my birth a lot because there was not one birth that made me feel like I was a failure or that I absolutely didn't want X, Y, or Z, because I decided however this baby gets here is fine with me. I just want as least trauma and emergency as possible, which I think is everybody's birth plan. So I said to them, if it looks like I'm going to need a cesarean early on, just tell me, because I'd happily take it. I don't want to be going, no, please let me push, I just want to try and then end up with a cesarean anyway. So I said to them really early on, whatever you need to do, that's fine. You just tell me, and I want to be informed, and I just want to know my options. And I think NCT was very good for me because it taught me about my options. And I think that's so important for any woman, whether you've been through loss or fertility troubles or anything, because taking control back is something that I think really helps, because with pregnancy loss and fertility troubles, you don't have any control. And I think that's what we struggle with a lot. So I went in to be induced, actually, because I was a week overdue and the naughty baby decided to stop kicking for a whole morning. And that was when he usually kicked a lot. And I thought, oh, I've thought about it now. I've thought about how he's not kicking. And if I don't go in and get it checked out, I'm going to be really, you know, upset with myself if I found out something was wrong. So I went in and I said, look, this baby's not kicking at all. And they put the monitors on me and he is so naughty. He kicked so much on the monitors. It was like a joke. They were like, are you sure? He just stopped kicking. I was so embarrassed. They told me to click the clicker every time he kicked. And I was clicking it every four kicks because I was so embarrassed about how active he was being. So anyway, they said, look, he seems fine, or it seems fine. I didn't know it was a boy at this stage. But you are a week overdue, and if you want, we can just kickstart this whole process. And I was really keen to just get going. First of all, because it was about 38 degrees in London, and I just could not bear being pregnant anymore because I was just so hot. And also I thought, if they can induce me, they were going to induce me in a non-medical, in a non-hormone way, sorry. So they inserted a balloon into my cervix. So it was a relatively new thing they were doing at that hospital. And actually, what was very interesting is they inserted the balloon in, and through doing so, they kind of gave me a sweep because they had to check how far dilated I was. And I was only 1 centimetre. But as soon as they put the balloon in, they said, right, so that's it for 12 hours now. You have the balloon in, and then in 12 hours, we'll take it out, and hopefully you would have dilated a bit further and we can burst your waters and get going. So there should be no need for the hormone drip. But I was getting these cramps, and I said to the midwife, oh my gosh, I'm really feeling these cramps. And she said, oh, you're not in labour. We haven't induced you. We've just put the balloon in. So these are just probably a bit of gentle tightening. So I thought, oh my God, I'm not going to be able to cope, because if these are gentle, I was really struggling. Anyway, my waters then broke within the next hour and a half, I think. And they said to me before, your waters will only break if you are then 4 centimetres or more, because that they have, you know, that's what happens. And then immediately as my waters broke, I was having gentle tightenings, as they were calling them, every 90 seconds. So as much as I was trying to count when I was in active labour, and they were telling me, don't be so stupid, you're not in active labour, you were just 1 centimetre an hour ago, I was thinking, I'm never going to cope. I'm never going to cope. And actually, if they had just checked me when I told them to, they would have seen that I was already 10 centimetres. So what I said to them was, right, well, if you say I'm not in labour, can you give me an epidural so that I can sleep whilst I dilate? Because I'm so exhausted already. Then hopefully once it wears off, then I'll be dilated to 10 centimetres and then I can start pushing. So she gave me the epidural and then she checked me. She thought, I'll check you now quickly and then you can have a sleep. And she said, oh my God, you're 10 centimetres, you're ready to push. So I would have been able to push this baby out much quicker than I did, because of course I couldn't feel anything after that. I didn't know how to push. So it was something that I've learned now, if I'm that lucky enough to go through it again, to listen to your intuition and demand things that you know you need. But I lose track of why I was telling you this, but I had no birth plan, basically. I had no birth plan. So I hadn't gone in saying I want an epidural, but equally, I didn't think I could cope with that pain for that much longer. So I was very happy to have the epidural. In the end, I wasn't able to. I pushed him all the way down, and the midwife had her gloves on. She was ready to catch him for 2.5 hours because he turned his head and he got his shoulder stuck. So in the end, they actually gave me a spinal block ready for a cesarean, But actually, he came out with forceps in one go just before they were going to give me a cesarean. So I'm glad I had no birth plan, really, because I think I would have been quite stressed that none of it went to plan. I didn't even get in the water. But I was just like, if you think that's the best thing to do, let's do it, because you're the doctor, you're the one with the qualifications, and I am not. So I'm just here ready to meet my baby. So I think some people have the anxiety about not knowing what's going to happen, whereas I had more anxiety trying to make a plan when I'd never done it before. I preferred to just go in and say, I know my options. I would like you to inform me of everything you're doing and everything that's going on, and then let's make a decision when it comes to it.
And I love that, because I totally understand why people want the control. And there is, for different reasons, you know, that is the right thing. And that might be around the drugs. It might be around whether or not it's an abdominal birth or not. But I was similar to you. I kind of was informed and had done my research. But ultimately, I just wanted to see how it played out and put my faith and trust in the doctors, and for them to keep me informed during that process. And that was... that sounds like a silly thing to say, but just a really nice way for me to enter into it, because I had no idea. You don't have any idea, do you, what's going to happen? And I know that I was really nervous about this kind of, well, this baby's going to come out and I just don't know what that's going to look like. But it was quite freeing, you know, for me. And I know there'll be people out there saying, no, I want the control. I want to know that I'm going in this day and having the baby out, and, you know, but yeah, for me, I was a bit like you, and it was quite freeing just to let it happen. And I'm really grateful that that was the process for me. But I absolutely hear what you're saying, and I hope that other people do, about, you know, demanding, and, you know, like if they had checked you before you'd done the epidural, it might have been slightly different, especially because they did check you afterwards. You think, why wouldn't you have done that first, honestly? But I'm sure you've been over that a million times in your head. You mentioned there that Alfie, although you didn't know it was Alfie at the time, was kicking you, and or not kicking you, actually, but then kicking you as soon as they put the monitor on. Now, I think that that is amongst many things that happen during pregnancy, preparing you for being a mum, because that's what they end up doing, isn't it? Making complete liars out of you every time. Oh, they can do this. Oh, no, they can't. Oh, they never do that. Oh, suddenly they do it. Like, how has motherhood been for you?
Well, so we had him and found out he was a boy, and it was, you know, I couldn't have been happier. And luckily, when he came out and they suddenly were doing tests on him, my anxiety changed from, is this baby going to be okay, to, is he going to have any long-term illnesses? I suddenly thought, oh my God, he might be blind, he might be deaf. And I suddenly thought, I hadn't even thought about that. I was just getting towards the birth and then nothing else was going on. So he was absolutely fine, and I stayed in for one night just because I'd had the epidural and I had a catheter and things. Came home and he was brilliant. The newborn phase was great. He didn't cause us any troubles. Obviously, he was up all night and things like this, but very normal baby. And obviously, we were in lockdown again, so I had George with me the entire time. So it was nice for him and me that we just did it together, and I felt very supported. Which was really nice. So as much as everyone said to me, the newborn phase is really emotional and really tough, I actually really loved it. And I think there was part of me that was just so longing to be in that phase. In the middle of the night, I thought, I'm so happy I'm awake to feed a baby. This is what I wanted the whole time. You know, that adrenaline wore off after a while, and I didn't always love getting up at 3 a.m. But what I found the hardest was when he was about 2 months to 4 months, I found that bit the hardest, because I was still learning him. I was still understanding what made him cry, what cry sounded like for what need. And he wasn't able to entertain himself anyway. He couldn't hold a toy, or, you know, nothing was entertaining him apart from me holding him. And I found that quite exhausting and relentless. And now he's just turned 6 months. I feel like 5.5 to 6 months, I sort of broke out of the newborn phase. And it was like, oh, I feel like I know him a bit more now. And I know what makes him tick and what makes him giggle. And I can distract him from having a meltdown a bit easier than I could. So I feel like it's taken me 6 months to get into my groove. But having said that, there's still so many things that bring on anxiety in such a different way. And I think probably that's going to be it until he's well, forever. But, you know, he's in his own room. That first night he's in his own room, I was setting my alarm on my watch to go off every 30 minutes to go and check that he was still breathing. It was ridiculous. But I think you just take each day as it comes and roll with the punches, because as I was saying to you before we started recording, this week we finally had some really good sleep from him. And then last night he decided to show me that, you know, don't get too comfortable, Mum. I also like to party sometimes in the night, and he gave us a terrible night. So I think what I've learned from the whole journey, start to finish, is that you just don't know what's coming. You've got to take each hurdle as it comes, because it could be the last hurdle you have to deal with, it could be that you've got another one coming. And I think trying to predict what's going to happen is actually more stressful than dealing with what's currently happening. So not comparing yourself to anyone else is also key, whether it's your pregnancy journey, whether it's your fertility journey, or whether it's your baby. Now, even now I'm like, oh, it's so weird, my friend's baby's already crawling and Alfie can't even roll over yet. It doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter, because she's also upset because Alfie's laughing a lot and her baby's not laughing a lot. And we all have our own journeys, and I think comparing yourself to someone else is completely pointless, even though we all do it, because we're not that person, and what works for them might not work for you, which is why I never say publicly what medication I was on or things like that, because it's not going to work for everyone. And I know that when I was going through the miscarriages, I was doing anything I could to make my chances better. So if someone said I was on X, Y, and Z medication, I would go and find that medication, try and take it myself, which, you know, is silly, because that might not work for me. And in fact, it might do the opposite, you know, it might work badly for me. So I think trying to stay in your own lane and running your own race is really important, but it's not easy to do.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you do talk in your book, and we'll talk about your book a little bit now, about comparison when it comes to bumps. And like, I hear it a lot, you know, like, oh, my bump's a different size. Or you'll have people say to people, you know, oh, that's a small bump, or that's a big bump, or, oh, have you got twins in there? And, you know, actually, people should probably just keep their opinions to themselves, number one. But people just like having things to say. But yeah, that comparison is, it is really difficult, as is having the trust in your body sometimes to, when you are pregnant, and knowing how much to push yourself. And I know when I took a break with our fertility journey, something that I wanted to do was make my body strong, you know, and I started weight training, and I thought, my body isn't doing the main thing that I want it to do. So actually, I want to make sure it can do this. And, you know, so I really, really got into that. And just, I really loved that feeling of being strong, even though it wasn't creating a baby for me. And in your book, you kind of talk about keeping strong and exercising and doing as much as you can, you know, through all the different trimesters. And it's broken down into each trimester and what to expect in each trimester, which is great. You're working with Claire Bourne, the pelvic floor physio, who's fantastic. I've got so much time for Claire and all of her work. And it's just a really nice way to gently, I guess, like, regain that trust in your body. Like, what would you say to people about exercise when they are pregnant?
Well, I think it's really interesting that you say regain the trust, because I really hated not trusting my body. And I think after you miscarry once or a few times, you start thinking how I did, where of course it's going to happen to me, my body's just not doing what it's supposed to do. And it's a really scary place to be in, where you don't trust your own body, you know. And what I wanted to get across in the book, which I think it sounds like it did if you're saying that, is that it's important to feel strong mentally and physically. So you want to be strong because pregnancy is hard on your body. Whether you have pelvic girdle pain or you don't have anything awful, just gaining the weight in one big bump in front of you puts all these different pressures on your body. Your posture changes, your center of balance is different, your feet can swell up, your joints get less stable and a bit sore, and there's so much to deal with in such a short space of time. If you think about it, it's less than a year, and we would never expect any woman to gain all those kilos in 9 months, let alone having a baby kicking you and giving you hormones and all these other kind of things. So staying strong is really good for your physical well-being. So to be able to keep walking around every day and not be feeling sore and things like that. But it's also really good for your mental well-being. So I know that by having exercise in my weekly schedule, that I knew that was time for me. It was great. I got endorphins flowing around me. I felt good about myself. All of those kind of things. And, you know, in normal times, you might want to go to a class, and that's a very social aspect. And you might meet other women who are pregnant who like exercising. But it doesn't mean that you need to lift weights. There's loads of ways to stay active in pregnancy. And I really got into swimming when I could. I loved swimming. I walked a lot. If you like cycling, spinning, yoga, you know, there's so many ways to do it. You just need to find something that works for you. But I think the power of feeling strong in your body and your mind is really underestimated. And I think that the other thing is you need to be strong for birth and for motherhood. You know, you've had this big thing, birth, however it happened for you. And then all of a sudden, you've given a baby and off you go. And it's like, oh, okay, no time really to stop, even though that's what we should be doing. Any other sort of operation, you'd have weeks of recovery of being doted on hand and foot and not lifting a finger. And all of a sudden, you're not allowed to sleep because you've got a baby all night. You've got to lift them. You've got to do this and that. And I think staying strong really does help you, because you get in awkward positions. And I know that if Alfie fell asleep on me in a weird position, I'd be like, don't move, he's fallen asleep. And I would sit in that uncomfortable, awkward position no matter what. And my back was agony. So, yeah, there's loads of reasons to stay strong. But I also really want to say, and I hope that comes across in the book, that if you feel awful in your pregnancy, if you've got morning sickness or exhaustion or anything that makes you not want to exercise, don't panic. You know, there are loads of women out there who don't exercise in their pregnancy and they're completely fine. So the book is merely there to be a guide. So if you want to exercise, here are some programs you can follow. Here are some workouts to take you through each trimester. However, it is not, you must do this on a Monday, this on a Tuesday. It's there for you to guide you when you're feeling good. So I certainly didn't exercise every day of my pregnancy, and I ate a lot of crisps because that's what Alfie wanted and that's what I decided to do. So I really want to make sure women don't feel pressured into exercising, but I hope that if they want to, it's a good guide and it explains a lot of things for you in there. There's also a lot of me chatting through how I felt in my pregnancy in the book as well, because I want women to feel like they're not alone, because pregnancy is a weird, lonely time, isn't it? And I want to be like a hand to hold during your pregnancy, basically.
Oh, well, I think that definitely comes across. And certainly, and I know it might sound silly, I don't know, but, you know, for people within this community, knowing that people get it and understand can be so important. It really can. And we want that handholding. We really do. A lot of us have been through it during our fertility or loss journeys with our doctors. And we want that maintained in whatever form it comes during our pregnancies and beyond as well. And so I definitely think that that's what you are doing here with your book. And thank you so much for sharing your story and talking to us about your book as well. I really, really appreciate it, Charlie.
Thank you for having me on and giving me the platform to share it. I hope it's helped at least one person.
I have absolutely no doubt it has, for sure. Super. All right, then. Well, take care.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.